The Big Picture Program, an award-winning program with your weekly dose of insights, fresh perspectives, and alternative analysis. Tune in as A.B. Dowji sheds light on various burning issues and brings forth a narrative that mainstream media tends to ignore. Informal yet hard-hitting, humorous yet authentic. The Big Picture Program with A.B. Dowji, now even bigger, on Saturday mornings at 11 a.m.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is A.B. Dowji and this is The Big Picture, broadcasting simultaneously on Radio Islam and Radio Al-Ansar. Ahlan wa sahlan and how's it, all you wonderful people out there? Millions of you, all loyal listeners of The Big Picture. Well, maybe not millions, but at least thousands, ne? Thousands. No? Okay, there must be hundreds, of course. But anyway, I know that my neighbor and his dog are regular listeners of this program. And for that, I am truly grateful. So, dear listeners, how has 2025 been treating you so far? Hey, no serious dhamma, no drama yet. Right. Just to lighten up a bit right at the start. And somebody sent me this thing on WhatsApp. An average Indian housewife's blood pressure and temper calms down after watching her maid arrive for after the December holidays. Yes, her blood pressure calms down. No wonder the maids are called calm wali. You got that, Mota? Hey, that sour face tells me you didn't. No problem, uncle. Ask your fro to explain. Calm wali. Right. Actually, I was in India and Kashmir in December. And let me tell you about something, well, I think it's quite funny, that happened in Mumbai on New Year's Eve. Well, around 11:30 p.m., some of us went... We left the hotel and went over to the waterfront. Those who went there would know this is a very, very long waterfront there. And we went to see the spectacular sight of fireworks that usually erupts when it's midnight. And it, of course, it was a lovely warm evening. Hundreds of thousands of people were there. The atmosphere was very exciting. There was a In fact, directly opposite the Taj Mahal Hotel, there was a huge crowd, much bigger than the rest. Everyone was looking up at the top of the hotels, of the hotel, this Taj Hotel. Cell phones were ready to record the expected display of magical fireworks lighting up the sky from the top of the hotel. And of course, we stood there all very excited. And then the crowd began chanting as the magic hour was approaching, chanting the countdown of the seconds to midnight. 10, 9, 8, 7. It was so exciting. Hundreds of cameras were ready to record everything, and everybody was looking up. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then guess what happened? Nothing. Yes, nothing. Zero. Not one bang or skyrocket. Just silence. One big sursurya. Again, in cracker language, you know what that is? You get these very tiny china crackers. When you light one and throw it, it either makes a big loud pat or just goes no banging at all. That's a sursurya. So the expected spectacular fireworks display turned out to be one big sursurya. Everyone stood there like sheep, and very sheepishly they quietly dispersed as if they were robbed of something. It was actually quite funny. A big anticlimax. So why am I telling you all this, Mota? Well, you know, to be honest, I don't have much to speak about today. So I'm just sort of padding along. Yeah. Hey, just to make you more jealous, in 3 weeks' time, inshallah, I'm off again with a group of 40 people to see something much better than a New Year's Eve fireworks display. Yes, folks, the Northern Lights way up in the Arctic Circle in Norway, a spectacular natural phenomenon where the sky is all lit up with a kaleidoscope of colors caused by atmospheric changes. What a sight, Habibi, what a sight. And also jollying in the heavy snow and speeding along on the sledge pulled by reindeers. Eh? Can you imagine it? Eh? And I said that to my six-year-old Zara. I said to Zara about this, and she said, Nana, don't forget to say hi to Santa Claus. And Leah also chimed in and said, hey, Nana, are reindeers real? You mean you're going to be on a sledge pulled by them and flying through the sky like Santa? Well, unfortunately, I had to burst their bubble and tell them that all the Santa stuff that they see in cartoons is a load of nonsense. Yeah, I told them that. I'm very cruel, eh? Anyway, let me leave all this time-filling talk. I'm trying to fill some time here. And get to some relevant stuff for this program, The Big Picture, where you are educated and inspired to new levels of understanding of the constantly unfolding dynamics characterized by subterfuge and unfathomable intrigue. Woo! I don't know what all that means, but it sounds very nice, eh? Hey, Uncle? So as usual, I begin by looking at some strange and bizarre news items that caught my eye. And so to a really fishy story. A fishy story. Seriously. So here's a question. How much would you pay for fish at the supermarket? Well, the Lucky Star tin fish is 28 rands 99. You see, folks, I do some serious research to prepare for this program. Okay, so what about fresh fish? Eh? For one fish, how much would you pay? Well, that's actually quite a silly question. It depends on the type of fish and the weight. Okay, let's just have a guess and say a nice shad around a kilo or so, maybe 100, 150 bucks. Well, guess what someone paid for just one fish at an auction in Japan? Let me tell you, but first fasten your seatbelt and put your seat in the upright position. Here's what the Guardian newspaper reported. The top bidder at the Tokyo fish market said they paid $1.3 million for a tuna on Sunday, the second highest price ever paid at an annual prestigious New Year auction. Michelin-starred sushi restaurateurs, the Onodera Group, said they paid 207 million yen for the 276 kilo bluefin tuna, roughly the size and weight of a motorbike. It's quite a big fish, that. The company on Odera's official Shinji Nagao told reporters after the auction, ha ha ha, the first tuna is something meant to bring in good fortune. Our wish is that people will eat this and have a wonderful year. Hey? Hey, you eat the fish and you have a wonderful year. That's a real fishy story. Eh? The first tuna is something meant to bring in good fortune. Our wish is that our people will eat this and have a wonderful year. Hmm. What you think of that? Eh? So there you are. $1.3 million for one fish. $1.3 million for one fish. Or, as our dear ex-president Yakubai would convert it into rand and say, This would be 24,351,596 So let me help him. $1.3 million for one fish is 24,000. Sorry, again, I'm doing the Zuma thing. 24,351,596.10. 24,351,596.10. Well, I think it's a bargain. Hey, what do you think, Mota? Anyway, just a quick word about Jacob Zuma. He is going to court in order to be reinstated as an ANC member. If you remember, not long ago, he was booted out. Well, he wants his membership back because, as his spokesperson said, he wants to take or go into the ANC or be back in the ANC and take over again and join it with his MK party. And maybe draw in the EFF also to form one big, wonderful party to rule South Africa efficiently and, of course, with no corruption at all. Nothing. Freedom at last. South Africa, we love you. Our beautiful land. Well, dear South Africans, my message to you is, let us pray. And let me add this. Let us pray very hard. Yeah, let us pray very hard because on the horizon, in 9 days' time, there's some hell of a big danger that's going to hit the whole world. Yep, whole world. Big danger, Habibi. 9 days' time. But first, let me take you back around 8 years ago. 8 years back. One day, I received a lawyer's letter threatening to take me to court and sue me for millions for defamation. Well, I must admit, I was shocked. This is what the letter from the lawyers said. Dear Mr. A.B. Dauje, we represent the International Association of Donkeys. It has been brought to the attention of our clients that you have repeatedly besmirched the good name and honor of donkeys by characterizing Mr. Donald Trump as a donkey. We take great exception to this malicious comparison because we are respectable members of the animal kingdom who are far more intelligent than Mr. Trump, and therefore call upon you to immediately desist from any further comments comparing donkeys to Mr. Trump. We warn you of severe consequences should you continue with this defamation of the good name of the donkeys. Signed on behalf of the International Association of Donkeys, Hee Haw and Partners. Dear listeners, I was really shocked and scared that I could be taken to court and sued for millions at that time, 8 years ago, when Donald Trump was about to become president. And therefore, this time, when he will again become president on the 20th of January, that's 9 days' time, I will resist the temptation to call him a donkey. But I will say this. The man is a first-class mampara. He takes Uluness to new levels. Seriously, folks, I'm really, really shocked that he has made it to the White House again. And Alu will be the most powerful leader of the world. And you must have heard yesterday that a court in the U.S. found him guilty of 34 counts of fraud relating to disclosure about his financial matters. Of course, he was not jailed. So there you have it, a 78-year-old Alu with a criminal record is set to be the next president of the United States of America. There can't be a better joke than this. Absolutely mind-boggling. To say that the man is silly is an understatement. Yep. Just listen to him speak, and you'll know that the man is an empty head in a big suit. Am I being cruel? Well, to confirm what I'm saying, just take a look at what he spoke at a one-hour press conference at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. Let me read some parts of a report in the British Guardian newspaper. This is what one of the commentators said. Trump made it clear that he wants to take over Greenland and the Panama Canal and did not rule out taking them by force. He said that his interest in turning Canada into a U.S. state and promised to rename the Gulf of Mexico as the Gulf of America, saying, "What a beautiful name, hey, what a beautiful name." Rambling on about the January 6th insurrection, if you remember that is when he refused to leave the White House and thousands of his supporters stormed the place, if you remember. This is what Trump said about that. He said, "We have to find out about the involvement of both the FBI and Hezbollah." Woo-hoo. Did you hear that? He said that Hezbollah was involved in all that chaos. If you think that's not an immediate and urgent need for an appointment with a psychiatrist, then I really don't know. Yes, the man is cuckoos. Hezbollah was trying to make him look bad? Huh? Aye, boy. And then he attacked the special prosecutor, Jack Smith, who brought criminal charges against him. This is what he said. "They brought this moron out of The Hague. He's a mean guy. He's a mean, nasty guy. His picture was perfect because you look at his picture, you say that's a bad guy with his robe, his purple robe, and he executes people. He shouldn't be allowed to execute people because he'll execute everybody. He's a nut job." Habibi, this is the President of the United States of America speaking like a paka dronki, spaced out on methylated spirits, Zol and Gavin. And you know what? It gets worse, Habibi. It gets worse. Let me read some more. The president-elect spoke at length about dishwashers, gas heaters, washing machines, water taps, and other appliances. This is what he said. He said, "It's called rain. It comes down from heaven. And they want to do no water comes out of the shower. It goes drip, drip, drip. So what happens? You're in the shower 10 times as long." Hey, I don't know if you can make sense of that, eh? "It's called rain. It comes down from heaven. And they want to do no water comes out of the shower. It goes drip, drip, drip. So what happens? You're in the shower 10 times as long." What a first-class mutia, eh? Yeah, mutia, to rhyme with that other root word. He also spoke about windmills. Windmills. Yes, windmills. You know those big ones that generate electricity. And this is his amazing comment about windmills. This is what he said. "The windmills are driving the world crazy, obviously." The windmills are driving the whales crazy, obviously. Obviously? Dear listeners, you didn't know that? That the whales are being driven crazy? Hey, you people are so dumb, eh? You didn't know that simple fact. Let me read more from the Guardian newspaper. "But the now repeated threats to U.S. allies mark a new and alarming departure. Trump's press conference coincided with a delegation of aides and advisors that included his son, Donald Trump, visiting Greenland, a territory of Denmark. Asked whether he could assure the world that he would not use military or economic coercion to gain control of the Panama Canal and Greenland, Trump said, No, I can't assure you on either of those two. But I can say this. We need them for economic security. Suddenly, the America First president, who vowed peace through strength, is sounding more like warmonger, his predecessor, George W. Bush. So here's one comment. Robert Reich, a former Labor Secretary, tweeted on Tuesday, "Get ready for 4 more years of rambling and outrageous lies, but don't let the absurdity distract you from the real goal of Trump, the continued consolidation of wealth and power into the hands of oligarchs. They want you to be so outraged that you tune out. Do not." Now, basically, the message is that there's going to be lots of lies and all kinds of stories that this fellow is going to churn out, so don't switch him off, because his idea is to be in the hands of the oligarch, the mega rich. He's playing into their hands. And the writer says that people assume that everything will be normal, nothing seriously disruptive under Trump. That's what the writer of that column says. And he concludes this. He says, the answer is by going even more extreme, even more provocative, even more outrageous than the last time. Tuesday was a wake-up call to the normalizers who are sleepwalking towards disaster. Those people who think everything is going to be normal, well, they are sleepwalking towards disaster. Strong statement there. So there you have it, folks. Trump in the White House and Zuma taking over the ANC and the presidency of South Africa. Let us pray. Can someone please get me up from this nightmare? All right. But wait. Hang on. There's another Mampara standing in the spotlight with Trump. Another first-class airhead. You know, they say that money talks. Well, it seems that the more money you have, the more bull you talk. Of course, I'm referring to our homeboy, the richest man in the world, Elon Musk. You know, I just wondered about him. The money is just pouring in by the millions almost every day, maybe every minute. What's his worth? Can you guess? Richest man in the world. He is worth $416 billion. Billion. And he can do so much of good with just a small part of that money, pocket money. He can do so much. He could be a leading statesman, a humanitarian, a nice guy. But he's aligned himself with that clown Trump and is increasingly stupid just like him. He should stick to making cars or his Twitter company X or his SpaceX project and so on. Why does he want to enter politics and make an idiot of himself? What's worse is that he seems to be a white supremacist and an Islamophobe. Listen to this. Since taking the reins of X, that is the Twitter company, Musk has increasingly used the social media platform's global reach to push his own political views. After spending $250 million to help secure Donald Trump's return to the White House, Musk has used his influence to back far-right and anti-establishment parties across the continent while attacking some of its most prominent center-left leaders. In recent days, Musk has waded into UK politics, calling on King Charles to step in and dissolve Parliament as he criticized the government over child grooming cases related to abuse by organized groups, referring to Pakistani guys who were doing these things with some girls. So he's into that suddenly. And of course, if you remember, after multiple convictions of sexual assault offenses against children, and that happened between 2010 and 2014, these Pakistanis were doing that in England. He also said he believes Nigel Farage, another Islamophobe, should be replaced as Reform Party leader in England. Amid reports, he could donate $100 million to the party. So he wants this Islamophobe to be the leader of that party in the UK. He is also into German politics, putting his nose everywhere. Elon Musk on Thursday reiterated his strong support for the far-right Alternative for Germany Party. It's called AFD, Alternative for Germany Party, ahead of the 23rd general election in Germany. So he said, if you are unhappy with the situation, you must vote for change. And that is why I'm really strongly recommending that people vote for AFD. That's why that's my strong recommendation. I think this is simply the sensible move. In fact, as I've said publicly, I think only AFD can save Germany. And I just want to be very clear about that. Only AFD can save Germany. End of story. And people really need to get behind the AFD. Otherwise, things are going to get very, very much worse in Germany. So, AFD, what does AFD party stand for? The far-right Alternative for Germany, AFD party, is known for its strong anti-Muslim and anti-immigration policies. The party frames Islam as incompatible with German values, calling for bans on minarets, the hijab in public institutions, and Islamic education in schools. There you are. So Musk is all for that party. Right, so there you have it, folks. Big money, big mouth. His name is Musk. But hey, not a good aroma from that name. Eh? In fact, it stinks. So 2025 is promising to be a roller coaster ride, Habibi. Roller coaster ride. And of course, we have our own clowns in our circus here. You know, I just couldn't believe what I heard from the GNU, the new GNU, the new Minister of Sport, Gayton McKenzie. I couldn't believe what he said. So South African Sports Minister Gayton McKenzie said he supported calls for a boycott of Afghanistan in the Champions Trophy. We're talking about cricket here. In Pakistan, adding his voice to those of British politicians who have called on England not to play them next month. England and South Africa are in the Afghanistan group in the one-day international competition and under pressure to boycott the fixtures in response to the Taliban government's crackdown on women's rights since returning to power in August 2021. So what did Gayton say? He said, as a man who comes from a race that was not allowed equal access to sporting opportunities during apartheid, it would be hypocritical and immoral to look the other way today when the same is being done towards women anywhere in the world. Let me repeat the last part. It would be hypocritical and immoral to look the other way today when the same is being done towards women anywhere in the world. Yes, I say. Say custom, uncle. Uncle? Gayton? Hypocritical and immoral. Wow. Wow, what a guy. Eh? He's really very, very concerned that the Taliban is not allowing women to play cricket. And so South Africa must not play against Afghanistan. I'm almost speechless, Habibi. And I'm actually feeling a buildup of nausea. I may have to run to the sink. Yeah, I might have to run to the sink. He used the word hypocritical and immoral. That would be the situation if South Africa played Afghanistan. The man is a champion of women's rights. Woo! Let's give him a standing ovation, everyone. Champion of women's rights. Well. Down the road from Afghanistan is Gaza. Bombs are dropping on women every day. And he said, I am morally bound to stand up for the women of Afghanistan. Well, yesterday, the prestigious organization Lancet said that the Gaza death toll was actually 40% higher than previous estimates. 40% higher. Reporting a figure of 64,260 killed, massacred, butchered. 64,260, 59% being women, children, and people over 65. Let that sink in a little bit. Eh? Dear Honorable Minister of Sports, Gaetan McKenzie, do you cry for the women of Gaza murdered by Israel? Do you stay awake at night and wonder about Gaza's children picking up bits of flesh of their torn apart mothers and collecting them in plastic bags? I think you sleep very soundly because you are a very strong supporter of Israel. I think, and I will be sincerely harsh, okay? You, sir, are hypocritical and immoral in supporting Israel as it carries out a genocide. A Holocaust is a more appropriate word. Shame on you. It's reported that McKenzie said there's no genocide in Gaza. Let's rewind to July last year. July last year, when McKenzie made war on peace. War on peace. What is that all about, eh? Listen to the City Press report. Let's look at it here. While Sports, Arts and Culture Minister Gaetan McKenzie was preparing to attend the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games in Paris, France on Friday, his department issued a statement without his knowledge condemning Israel's participation in the Games. In a statement released on the letterhead of the Ministry of Sports, Arts and Culture on Friday evening, it was argued that Israel's participation was against the spirit of the Games. McKenzie, leader of the Patriotic Alliance, is a vocal supporter of Israel. The statement, which was not issued under anyone's name, further stated that the department condemned the participation of the genocidal state of Israel in the Games. It said, "We view this participation as grossly inhuman and indicative of scant regard for thousands of Palestinian lives lost as a result of continued genocide by Israel against women, children, men, and elderly, and the sick." That's what the statement said. According to the statement, Israel should also be boycotted from participation in the Olympic Games, as with the South African apartheid government. The question of who issued this anonymous statement was answered on Friday evening on X, on Twitter, by McKenzie himself when he claimed it was his deputy, the ANC's Peace Mabe. Peace. So he was making war on peace. He said, McKenzie says he will express his displeasure about the statement after the Games, as he does not want a political fallout now to detract from South Africa's athletes. In the run-up to the general election, McKenzie repeatedly made it clear that he was pro-Israel. So McKenzie was very cross that his department issued a statement calling for a boycott against Israel that has been murdering women every day. He obviously thinks it's hypocritical and immoral to stop the genocide, eh? What a guy. What a guy. And here's one more statement. McKenzie explained his stance in support of Israel in November 2023. This is what he said. "My Bible commands me to stand with Israel. My Bible tells me that he who curses Israel curses himself. He who blesses Israel blesses himself." Well, if he is suggesting that God is okay with the genocide of the Palestinian people, then I'm sorry. But this is clear indication of blasphemy in my view. I don't want to get into a theological debate, but may I sportingly suggest that the minister looks at a deeper understanding of the statement. Perhaps he will reach a different conclusion than his superficial reading of it. Hundreds of thousands of Christians and Jews around the world are standing up to Israel's genocide. Are they standing against God, against the scriptures? Even the Pope, the leader of 1.4 million Catholics, has been highly critical, saying what Israel is doing is very, in his words, very serious and shameful. He said, the Pope said, "We cannot in any way accept the bombing of civilians. We cannot accept that children are freezing to death because hospitals have been destroyed or a country's energy network has been hit." Well, there you are. Mr. Minister of Sports and Culture. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, okay? You know what really astounds me? Is that the genocide is broadcast right into our homes. The whole world is witnessing it, and yet is doing nothing, nothing to stop the massacre, massacre after massacre, every day, hell on earth. Well, here's a question which is answered in the clip I'm about to play. What if, imagine if, such a thing happened to Jews, and it was the Palestinians doing the killing. What if? Okay? Listen to this clip. This is A.B. Dawji bidding you all Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
First, if Palestinians had spent the last 8 decades stealing Jewish homes, expelling, oppressing, imprisoning, poisoning, torturing, killing, raping them. If Palestinians had killed an estimated 300,000 Jews in 1 year, targeted their journalists, their thinkers, their healthcare workers, their athletes, their artists, bombed every Israeli hospital, university, library, museum, cultural center, synagogue, and simultaneously set up an observation platform where citizens came to watch their slaughter as if a tourist attraction. If Palestinians had corralled them into by the hundreds of thousands into flimsy tents, bombed them in so-called safe zones, burned them alive, cut off their food and water and medicine. If Palestinians made their children wander barefoot with empty pots, made them gather the flesh of their parents into plastic bags, bury their siblings, their cousins, their friends, made them sneak out from their tents at night to sleep on their parents' graves, made them pray for death. Just to join their families and not be alone in this terrible world. If we terrorize them so utterly that their children lose their hair, lose their memory, lose their minds, and made those as young as 4 and 5 die of heart attacks, if we mercilessly force their NICU babies to die, alone in hospital beds, crying until they could cry no more, died and decomposed in the same spot. If Palestinians used wheat flour, a truck, to lure starving Jews, then opened fire on them as they gathered to collect the day's bread. If Palestinians finally allowed a food delivery into a shelter with hungry Jews, then set fire to the entire shelter and aid truck before anyone could taste a bite of the food. If a Palestinian sniper bragged about blowing out 42 Jewish kneecaps in 1 day, as one Israeli soldier did in 2019, if a Palestinian admitted to CNN that he ran over hundreds of Jews with his tank, their squished flesh lingering in the tank treads. If Palestinians were systematically raping Jewish doctors, patients, and other captives with hot metal rods, jagged and electrified sticks, and fire extinguishers, sometimes raping them to death, as happened with Dr. Adnan al-Bursh and others. If Jewish women were forced to give birth in filth, get C-sections or leg amputations without anesthesia. If we destroyed their children, then decorated our tanks with their toys. If we killed or displaced their women, then posed in their lingerie. If the world were watching the live-streamed systematic annihilation of Jews in real time, there would be no debating whether that constituted terrorism or genocide. And yet, two Palestinians, myself and Muhammad al-Kurd, showed up here to do just that, enduring the indignity of debating those who think our only life choices should be to leave our homeland, submit to their supremacy, or die quietly and politely.
What happens around you and beyond?
Not a penny to pay for lentils, for wheat. We have nothing to do with both sides fighting. We just want to live. We want to be safe.
Instant coverage on the turn. This is Radio Islam International.
أدا يا صاحي كي